Welcome to the Bigger Pockets Money Podcast, show number 184, where we interview Christine and talk about saving, investing, and purposely increasing your monthly expenses with a new house.
Our expenses are drastically going to change when we move into this house, and we just want to be in the best situation possible. I want to be able to work part-time when we have kids. Like, I want him to be able to retire young. So I'm thinking if we can save, I mean, I don't know. It's really hard to plan for life that is so unknown.
Hello, hello, hello. My name is Mindy Jensen. And with me as always is my fan of real estate co-host, Scott Trench.
These intros you give, Mindy, with the adjectives, they're always a huge asset to the show. Oof, that's bad.
Scott and I are here to make financial independence less scary, less just for somebody else. To introduce you to Every Money Story, because we truly believe that financial freedom is attainable for everyone, no matter when or where you're starting.
That's right. Whether you want to retire early and travel the world, go on to make big time investments in assets like real estate, start your own business, or simply coast to financial freedom by earning a good income and saving most of it, we'll help you reach your financial goals and get money out of the way so you can launch yourself towards those dreams.
Scott, I'm really excited to talk to Christine today because I think she's in a position with a lot of other people where she's doing it right, but feels like she should be doing more or is wondering what the next step is. And I think this is a lot of fun today to talk to her. And sometimes the answer really truly is, nope, you're doing great. Just keep going.
Yeah. I mean, there's four levers in wealth building. You can spend less, you can earn more, you can invest more aggressively, or you can create assets such as through entrepreneurship. And Christine and her fiance are choosing to just generate a lot of income, spend very little of it, and invest it passively. And so, you know, when you choose that approach, which is very viable, and you know, it's boring, right? You just do it, and you accumulate wealth at a pretty good clip and get rich over a moderate period of years, 5-10 years, and you're done. And so it's like, is it really that simple? Yeah. And I think, you know, Christine's story will show that. And they're doing a great job. They've got two high income earners about to get married and are set up really wonderfully to begin their lives together and have a family and all those different types of things. It's because they just grind it out and have for several years in a row earning these high incomes and spending very, very little. Like they're earning two minimum wage incomes. Frankly, that's about how they're spending in aggregate combined. So I think it's fantastic. I think it's a great example of what just hitting the fundamentals can achieve for you without doing anything fancy, except for, of course, the two close to six-figure, maybe a little over six-figure incomes.
You know what I didn't hear when we talked to her today? I didn't hear one instance of, well, I bought this because I deserved it. There was none of this consumerism that can be the difference, really, frankly, between people who are going to hit financial independence and people who might not. They want things that they can't afford or don't need or both. What's the phrase? We buy things that we don't need to impress people we don't like.
Yep. I don't think that is Christine and Brian's problem at all.
Nope, not at all. Okay. Before we bring in Christine, we should remind our listeners that the contents of this podcast are informational in nature and are not tax or legal advice. And neither Scott nor I nor Bigger Pockets is engaged in the provision of legal, tax, or any other advice. You should seek your own advice from professional advisors, including lawyers and accountants, regarding the legal, tax, and financial implications of any financial decision you contemplate. Okay, Scott, let's go tell Christine how to run her life.
Remember when you had to pay to get a lead's phone number? It was like the dark ages. Until Deal Machine made skip tracing a thing of the past. Now, with your Deal Machine plan, you'll get unlimited access to phone numbers and contact information for no extra cost. That's right, get high quality, reliable information trusted by leading financial institutions, all fully compliant with the federal Do Not Call list. Explore over 150 data points, including age, gender, marital status, occupation, and a ton more. Trust me, this is the data you need for off-market deals. With new filters, people flags, and color-coded phone numbers, lead management just got a ton easier. Ready to step up your investing game? Sign up for a Deal Machine plan today and gain immediate access to this unlimited treasure trove of contact information and phone numbers. Just head to dealmachine.com/BP. Transform your lead generation and deal-making strategies with Deal Machine. Sign up today and start exploring the unlimited possibilities at dealmachine.com/BP.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED lights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Deciding how to invest your capital can be extremely challenging, especially when the market is constantly changing. That's why it's never been more important to partner with a company that has a great track record. The BAM Capital executive team has successfully navigated through the Great Recession, COVID-19, and the current interest rate environment while delivering maximized returns to their partners. BAM Capital is a trusted multifamily syndicator with over $1.3 billion in transactions, delivering a historical average of over 35% IRR with an average hold period of 3.5 years. BAM Capital has consistently paid preferred return distributions for over 50 consecutive months, has not lost limited partners capital, and has not called capital past the subscription amount. BAM Capital's disciplined investment strategy is targeting undermanaged, institutional quality trophy assets throughout the U.S. heartland for accredited investors who are looking for generational wealth building or monthly income opportunities. Their offerings target cash flow stability, capital preservation, long-term appreciation, and accelerated tax benefits. Join BAM Capital's over 1,200 investors across 44 states and get started today at BAMCapital.com. Again, that's BAMCapital.com. Today we're speaking with Christine. Christine lives in California, which is a notoriously expensive housing market. She's just put down a deposit on a new build house, which can be a great way to get into a home without the bidding war that we have in this current ridiculous housing market that we find ourselves in. She's looking at financial independence to make her future secure while still being able to pursue meaningful work without worrying about how much it pays. Christine, welcome to the podcast. I'm so excited to talk to you today.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Let's just jump right into it. Let's look at what money's coming in and where you're putting it.
Okay, so currently we take home about $145,000 a year, and that is after maxing out our 401ks. We currently spend about $45,000 on our expenses. That includes rent, groceries, everything, and we save the rest aggressively.
You're saying that you bring home $145,000 after tax and after retirement account contributions?
Yes.
Nice.
Yes.
Okay, great.
And you're spending $45,000?
Yes, currently, until we move into this new build.
So you're generating nearly 100 grand a year in just after tax liquidity after maxing your 401k out in California?
Yes.
All right. So can you tell us how this is happening?
Well, we rent a room right now. We pay $600 a month between the both of us. That includes everything, utilities. So that's really helping.
And who's the both of us?
My fiance and I.
Fiance.
I'm just going to refer to him as Brian because that'll be a lot easier.
Okay, great.
So Brian and I rent a room for $600 a month. We spend about $1,000 a month on food. That's in going out and groceries. We live pretty close to work, so we spend about $200 a month on gas. I think I have a breakout. Transportation, yeah, it's like $6,200 a year, about $2,400 a year for the gym. We go to the gym often. We have a pretty big travel fund, so about $6,000 a year for that. And then we have like $4,000 for gifts, and everything else comes out to about $5,000.
Love it. What do you do for a living?
So I'm an estimator. I went to school for mechanical engineering, and then I went over to estimating. So I estimate mechanical and plumbing systems in the construction industry.
Oh.
And then, yeah, it's really fun. So I get to play in spreadsheets all day, and it's, yeah, definitely something I enjoy.
So what I'm hearing is you guys are, before tax, you guys are probably close to about $100,000 salaries, maybe a little more. Then after tax, you're able to keep 145 of that after the retirement accounts maxing out. And you guys are just all out in pursuit of this financial independence thing, is what I gather, based on what you just described. Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
When did that start for you guys?
So we met about 3.5 years ago, and Hugh had a house. He was renting out a room, and then I moved in a couple months later, and we just really, like, he was financially savvy. I always had, like, a big savings, and then we kind of just looked at our finances together and, like, let's save, like, aggressively, because, I mean, we looked at real estate. It doesn't really make a lot of sense to invest in real estate locally. It was just, it makes no sense number-wise. So we're like, okay, we're just going to throw all the money that we can save into VTI, and it's really worked out well over the past 3 years.
So you guys got really aggressive about this in partnership 3-4 years ago and yes. Kind of moved. Can you walk me through what happened when he owned a house, but it sounds like you rent a room now? What's going on with that?
So he owned a house. He bought it in 2015 for like $296,000. I moved in 2018. We lived there for 2 years. His brother actually moved in with us and rented out two of our rooms. So we're only splitting between the two of us like $600 then. But then his brother wanted to buy a house. And we thought about renting out this house that he was living in. And it just didn't make sense. I think we would cash flow $100 a month. And I was like, I don't want to be a landlord for $100 a month. That didn't include property management in the numbers. So we sold the house for $385, pocketed that, put that in investments, and then rented a room from his brother when he moved for $600, and were able to save just as aggressively for the last year and a half.
So what's been the story here? You know, how much wealth have you guys built, or how do you kind of manage your finances? You have $145,000 in income. It sounds like you're managing them as a household right now. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes. We have separate accounts, but we track things. Look, how much do you have? Okay, cool. You're doing good. And we keep in contact. Like, we have a spreadsheet where I have everything, both mine and his, and we split everything pretty much 50-50. So currently we have $250 in our retirement accounts. We have $370 mostly in VTI. We have $90,000 in bonds, which we're going to liquidate when we put our down payment down. $50,000 in cash.
Wait, hold on. One second here. We have $350 in the after-tax brokerage accounts. $250 in retirement accounts, $370 in after-tax brokerage accounts. And those yes. are your two biggest buckets, it sounds like.
Yes.
What were the other ones?
Absolutely. $90,000 in bonds and $50,000 in cash.
All right. So you guys are doing great. And can I, we're getting real personal with all this stuff. Can I ask how old you guys are?
I'm 28 and he is 32.
All right. So you guys are just crushing it right now. And it sounds, you said fiance, so you're set to get married. When's that going to happen?
I think August. We're all like right. COVID and planning. We wanted to go elope. We don't want to spend a ton of money on a wedding. So we wanted to go to Bali. We were really excited about that. And yeah, that's not going to happen.
Yeah. Well, I can relate to that one. So yeah. we got married last year in 2020. So that, okay. Well, great. So you've got a net worth of nearly $750,000, if I'm doing that mental math correctly. What's the goal?
The goal, I mean, our expenses are drastically going to change when we move into this house, and we just want to be in the best situation possible. I want to be able to work part-time when we have kids. Like, I want him to be able to retire young. So I'm thinking if we can save, I mean, I don't know. It's really hard to plan for life that is so unknown.
And what's your new housing situation going to be? I think that's a great point that you guys bring up, because you can't sustain living in the room after, you know, starting a family most likely, which it sounds like you're planning to do. So what's going to change with your housing situation?
So, well, it'll be a 3-bed, 2-bath. I don't know if we're going to have roommates. We keep going back and forth. I think if we did have a roommate, we could save $9,000 a year right there. That's just one. We've had roommates since we've met, so I don't know if we're kind of ready to, like, oh, let's just be on our own, but we're toying around with that idea. And then everything else pretty much stays the same expense-wise. Our mortgage goes up to $37,000 a year, so it's quite a bit.
Yeah, but I mean, right now you're saving $95,000 a year. You could easily live off one salary, and you guys are in great shape with this. You could easily live off one. So you know all of that. It's about how to get to retirement level of wealth as rapidly as possible from here, right?
Yes.
You guys already have built the option for you to work part-time if you have kids, for example, with your current
right.
state. So I guess there's like a number of questions coming up here, but the overall story is, dang, you guys are doing great. This is clearly optimized for financial independence, and you're generating cash at a rate of $100,000 a year and maxing out your retirement accounts and just clearly have all these things optimized here.
Yes. So I'm predicting that we'll spend about $75,000 a year, so 30K more when we have the house. And then in the future with kids, I'm guessing, I have no idea, maybe 125 a year. And so we won't be able to build wealth as rapidly. But, and then another question is like, do we keep maxing out the 401ks or do we put them in brokerage accounts instead? Stuff like that. Those are my questions. What's the best route?
Okay. Yeah. Like Scott said, you are doing very well. Nice job. Congratulations. You are probably not going to go broke before you retire. I have a couple of questions, though. First of all, I love that you have money dates. It seems like you're constantly talking about money, like just as part of your relationship, which normalizes it and makes it more of a, hey, let's work on this together, instead of, wow, you're doing everything wrong. And, you know, starting off a money conversation, especially when you're the one who's money conscious and the partner is not, can be kind of difficult and can, you know, it can sometimes come from an accusatory standpoint. So I love that you guys are talking about money before you get married. I did not. I'm sure Scott did, but we got married at different times. You said you split everything 50-50. Does he make a similar salary?
He makes quite a bit more than I do, but okay. I make a substantial amount, so I have no problem splitting it.
Okay. And you said $90,000 in bonds. I don't love bonds, and you are very young. So why is there so much money in bonds?
So back when they cut the high yield savings account, I thought I was being clever, and I saw a 2% yield on bonds. So I was like, oh, I'm just going to keep my money there for a year and let that build up with a little bit higher interest rate than 0.5%. So that's what I was thinking.
That's probably done real well for you.
Yeah, it hasn't done too bad.
So that's the, you know, bonds, like, they don't generate much income at 2%, but when the yields decline, you get a huge amount of leverage on that yield decline because, you know, when bond yields drop by 25%, the equity value goes up by 25%. So you probably made a lot of money in that move.
I think mine did. Brian also did the same thing, and he's down 5%. He tells me every day. So
interesting. Sorry,
well,
Brian,
that's it.
You can't,
you'll never retire now.
I know.
So it's more of just a savings account than an actual way to invest. Okay, that makes sense, and yes. I will allow it. Are you going to continue to live in California after you reach financial independence? Because California is expensive.
I know, but both of our families are here and it's really important for us to stay close.
Okay, that's valid. You are welcome to live wherever you would like.
It is expensive though.
It is expensive. You said you estimated $125,000 a year for spending, and using the 4% rule or multiplying it by 25, I came up with $3.125 million. Is what your yes. FI number would be if you were going to completely quit working. And you're at 28, you're, you know, not doing bad. What do you have, like $700,000-ish towards your $3 million goal? So that's, you know, that's doing okay.
So we have to put a lot of that down for our down payment for the house. We're going to put 20% down.
Okay.
Mm. So that'll dwindle a little bit.
And how much is the house?
The house is currently 557 without any upgrades. We're conservatively projecting 600.
Okay.
Okay. So what's great about that, though, is that that is a year and a half of savings for you guys. For many people, their down payment is 5 to 10 years of savings, and they're having to come up with that cash. So while it's a lot, yeah, it's just not, the stakes are not nearly as high because your fundamentals are so strong in terms of how much cash you're able to generate because of the high incomes. So, like, I think you've got a number of interesting, well, go ahead, more on the house. What did you have any questions on the house?
Well, we just won't be able to save as rapidly once we get into the house. Like, our expenses go up by 30 grand a year.
Well, you go from living in one room and paying $600 a month to living in a nice house. That's going to happen. So the thing is that you guys have obviously done this grind for 3 years. So it's like a hill you have to climb in this journey in building wealth. And you are on the other side of the hill. You're on the downhill slope because you've built up $750,000 in assets and have that tailwind behind you and all those kinds of things that will follow you for the rest of your lives, I bet. And now you can buy the house and feel a lot better about it. Of course, it's an anchor to a certain extent over living in a one bedroom. You know, that's in a bedroom, right? But I think that like, come on, if anyone's in a responsible position to buy a house, it's you guys, as far as we can tell. We've got a book for you.
She said that they don't plan on moving because both of their families are there. You mentioned having a roommate, going back and forth with that. Have you considered short-term renting one of the rooms in the property as a way to sort of have roommates, but sort of not have roommates?
I've kind of looked into that. I don't think that the nightly fee is really worth having a bunch of strangers in our house.
Okay.
So it's like probably $60 a night.
Oh, okay. Are there any people that you know that you would rent longer term?
I think so, but I'm not 100% sure.
Okay.
So maybe if that person comes along, we'll definitely consider it.
Okay. And just because you have a tenant for a while doesn't mean that you always have to have a tenant or a roommate forever. You could just, you know, the first couple of months or the first couple of years, just boost your savings a little bit.
Definitely.
You kind of gave us a ballpark of like 40, 50 a year in annual spending. Is that right?
Yes, currently.
And you're saying that you're just going to go up to 125K a year. Can you walk us through that projection?
Yes. So I'm guessing how much kids are going to cost. I have no idea. So I think about $2,000 a month per kid. So $48,000 a year. I have no idea.
So that would put you at like 98. Well, I think that is the kind of the key thing. That's the key bogey in this is because you're currently at 750 in wealth, but that seems so small, I'm sure, in the context of early retirement when your number is 3.2 million that you need to get to, right? And now people listening to that are thinking that's a crazy statement, but that's probably what's going through your guys' head in terms of this wealth building journey. And the bogey in here is how much that spending is actually going to be. And 2,000 per month per kid seems really high,
maybe.
But I don't know what I don't know about this. So I don't know. Mindy, what do you think about the cost per kid in this one?
Well, I do think it sounds high. I don't spend that much for my two kids, but I love that you're overestimating because if you think it's going to be 2,000 and then it ends up being 500, great. You all of a sudden have $1,500 a month extra in your budget. If you think it's going to be 500 and it is 2,000, all of a sudden you're scrambling. So I think you're overestimating, but I also think that's great to overestimate because what are you going to do if it only costs 500? You're just going to put that $1,500 into some sort of investment, right? So
exactly.
You know, it's better to have extra money. I want to know about your investments themselves. You said 250 in retirement accounts. I'm assuming mm-hmm. that is a 401k or an IRA, a pre-tax investment. 370 yes. after-tax brokerage. Is any of that in a Roth?
So, no, the retirement, the 250 actually does include some Roths. Not a lot, maybe 40, 50 grand of that is in Roth IRAs.
Okay. And do you continue to max that out every year?
Yes, we both do.
You are going to hit up on an income restriction soon. And I think there's...
Yes.
I would love for somebody to correct me if I am incorrect on this, but I looked it up online and it's $139. I'm sorry. $139,000 in salary for a single person, but only $206,000 for married. So you're not currently, and that's your adjusted after you've contributed to your other accounts. But you're not hitting up on that right now, but it sounds like you could potentially hit up on the I can't contribute to my Roth anymore, which is a great problem to have.
Well, they may be hitting up on that because that's 145K after tax. So they're probably right in the bubble.
If we were married, right?
Oh, yeah. If you were married, it's married. 206. Yeah. When you're not married, it's 139 each, which is better.
So one of them is probably under, one of them is probably over. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. So definitely look into that and continue to max the Roth as
long as we can.
Yeah, as long as you can. That is, especially at your age. I really like when I see young people maxing out the Roth, because that just continues to grow tax-free forever. And then you take it out to buy a house. You can take it out to the principal out, which I wouldn't do because you're sitting pretty elsewhere. But you can take it out for medical reasons. You can take it out to pay for college. My 14-year-old, I want her to start a pet sitting business and have everything go through the business so she can contribute to her Roth IRA at 14, which would be amazing. I wish I would have done that. but this isn't my show. This is yours.
We know you've heard it before. Cash flow is getting very hard to find. There's always long-distance investing, but you may be thinking, I don't have a team, enough experience, or the market knowledge to get in. That's where you're wrong, and that's also where Rent to Retirement comes in. Rent to Retirement offers fully turnkey properties that are newly built or renovated, leased and managed, allowing you to invest out of state with confidence. They've got single family, multifamily, new build, and syndication opportunities across multiple markets. They even have BRRRR deals with immediate equity. Rent to Retirement helps investors learn how to build a bulletproof business plan with the best investment and tax strategies around to help you reach financial freedom through real estate. There's no excuse not to get started in real estate investing when you have the right team and systems already in place. To learn more, visit renttoretirement.com. That's renttoretirement.com.
Or text REI to 33777. Again, text REI to 33777.
This show is sponsored by Airbnb. Did you know that a long time ago, before I ever started my real estate business, I turned one of my first primary residences into an Airbnb? And that's the extra income that I needed from Airbnb that gave me the confidence to go out and work for myself and eventually quit my 9-to-5 job. And now I have dozens of Airbnbs all over the country. I've even partnered up with the old David Green on a recent property in Scottsdale to take our portfolio to the next level. And of course, we host it on Airbnb. But you don't need to be a full-time real estate investor to start on Airbnb. As a matter of fact, I was self-managing 10 properties while working my 9-to-5 job, so I know anybody can do it. Think about it this way. You're looking for extra income and going on a vacation. Wouldn't it be great to rent out your space and let your property pay for itself while you're gone? I did this one time. I pitched my wife and my roommate, because we were house hacking, on the idea of renting out our home, and it paid for all of our expenses on a trip to Mexico City. So go and give it a try. It might just change your life, just like it did mine. And I really do mean that. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Saving for a down payment, a wedding, or just looking for extra money to invest? Monarch Money turns your budgeting woes into wins. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best budgeting app overall. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, set goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/pockets. Monarch's simple, intuitive design makes it easy to manage your money like a pro. Add a partner or family member to your account for no extra cost, so combined finances become a breeze. Customize your budgets and notifications, set up automatic rules for transactions, and more. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/pockets. That's monarchmoney.com/pockets for your extended 30-day free trial. Listen up, business owners. Here's some quick math. Fewer costs equals more profit. The problem? You're spending more than ever on operations, materials, deliveries, software, and more. So why not reduce your costs and headaches with NetSuite by Oracle? NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. NetSuite lives in the cloud, which means you can reduce IT costs with no hardware required. Cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because now you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. It makes sense that over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Don't let rising costs sink your business's growth. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/bpmoney. That's netsuite.com/bpmoney. netsuite.com/bpmoney.
When I zoom out on your portfolio and what's going on here, I see two obviously capable individuals earning huge salaries, and playing a tremendous amount of defense here. Your costs are completely under control and you bring in what appear to be relatively stable salaries, but with limited upside. Your career, I mean, and when I say limited upside, you're probably going to earn lots more over your careers. You know, you're still early in the career and those will probably go up. But I wonder, have you guys considered getting much more aggressive about your position? Because your position, you have cash, you have a year, at least a year of expenses right now. One of you could stop working and focus full-time on investing or entrepreneurship, which would, you know, create a risk in, you know, in the short run, but potentially far greater outcomes in the long run with that. Have you guys considered that or discussed that at all?
So my fiance is a CPA. He kind of already owns his own business within a partnership. So I think that he might branch off maybe in the future. I'm not really sure. So that would be one avenue. I personally don't have any desire to become an entrepreneur, but investing, yeah, I mean, passively is kind of my route. I don't know that I would want to explore other opportunities.
Fair enough. The reason I asked that is because that's one way to really accelerate the gap between that $3 million moving target number that we have here. The other way, given what you just said, is probably really kind of rethinking and doing it and investigating what that baseline spending you need to work towards will be, because that can move your target from, you know, if you can move that target down to $1.5 million and that's reasonable, that's 3 years away from you versus 10 years away, whatever your model is telling you on the financial independence side at $125,000 in annual spending.
Right. Yes. I think it's 12 years last time I checked, and that would be $3 million, I believe.
Yeah. I think that number is way too conservative and that you should still be conservative in thinking through that, but you should really investigate that number and boil it back down. Because probably one of you guys is going to be able to work, generally speaking, for a long time. So I don't know. I just think you're closer than you think, given your situation with this. I don't know. Mindy, what do you think?
No, I agree with that. I think you are closer than 12 years. And what I have found in my personal experiences with money is you start off with a little bit and then it grows a little bit and then it grows a little bit. And then it hits a certain point and it just grows like crazy. And the snowball, it starts rolling down the hill and then it just carries so much steam. The first million takes you 10 or 15 years to accumulate, but then the next million is like 2 years. Because you're continuing to add to it, but it's also growing on its own. So I don't think that even if you keep the $3 million target, I don't think that it will take 12 years. Of course, past performance is not indicative of future gains in the stock market. but it does, if you look over the history of the stock market, it goes up and to the right. What are you investing in? Is it strictly
VTI or the Fidelity equivalent?
Okay. Yeah. And you mentioned potentially working part-time, and Brian owns his own business or partnership, so he could technically go part-time whenever he wanted to. I think that also helps with the end number. Like I need 3 million. Well, you need 3 million, assuming you're not generating any other income. Are there opportunities in your estimator world for part-time work? Because it seems like if you're good, they would work around your schedule.
Yes, I do have someone in my office who works 4 days a week, so that looks really enticing. And then they also have talked about like hiring on estimators as contractors, which I think is really cool. So I could work totally my own hours, my own schedule, and that would be a good like part-time retirement gig.
Yeah, that would be. If you enjoy what you're doing, you... What is that phrase? If you enjoy what you do, you never work a day in your life. But if it's fun to do, it doesn't, you know, it's not so hard to get into the office.
That's right.
How are you guys like pretty like when are you buying the new house?
Why or when?
When?
Oh, September is supposedly when it is complete.
Okay, so you've already, okay, sorry, yeah. So that's going to happen there. So your life is about to get you're about to begin reaping the benefits of the grind that you've put in place in September, August, as a couple of big events transpire, the getting married and the house. I mean, if you're not really interested in entrepreneurship and you're not really interested in more active investing, then it's kind of just keep doing what you're doing. And none of the like tweaks really make that big of a difference. Like, do we invest in the 401k or the Roth? I like the Roth a little better personally. I'm in a high income bracket. So the 401k on paper would make a lot of sense. And you guys are in California, where you have a high income bracket and the state and local taxes that are really high. So that kind of makes you think the 401k is an option. But I just personally wonder if taxes are going to be higher in 20, 30 years than they are today. And, you know, if you guys are nearly millionaires at average age of 30, then, you know, you're probably going to be in a high income tax bracket come retirement age, unless you really screw it up. So I think, the Roth may make sense there. But 401k is not a bad option. And we're talking about splitting hairs there, really, I think at the end of the day with a lot of these things.
Right.
So I just think that the answer is you're gonna have to keep doing what you're doing, but I really don't think you should keep I don't think you need to keep the what clearly on paper speaks to me as a intense grind with your finances. I know it because I've been there and done that for years in a row. You're over the hump. You don't need to do that anymore to continue building wealth. And so I would just consider like, hey, I'm going to relax and chill out about this house. Yeah, I'm going to get a housing expense in here, but I've done the work to put me on the other side of the snowball with that. And I can back into a much more reasonable number here that doesn't require me to grind and stress out about this. You know, you can't buy yourself into a place where you're back into stress because of the spending with that. But I don't think you need to go all out in order to coast to retirement here very early. You could accelerate it, of course, with entrepreneurship or active investing, and you're in a perfect position to do that if you so choose, but that doesn't sound like you're interested.
Yes.
I don't know if that's helpful, but that's my take on it.
And I don't have anything to compliment add, because Scott is correct. You're doing really well. And, you know, but once you discover financial independence, you're like, oh, I have to get there. Jacob Lundfisk from Early Retirement Extreme ate beans and rice and lived in like the basement of somebody's crawl space or something. Like, he really was extreme in his pursuit of financial independence. It doesn't have to be that way. And if what
and
you're
so
doing,
are they. So are they. They live in a one bedroom for $600 a month in California.
That's our sacrifice.
And that's great. And I am completely complimentary of that. I think it's wonderful. And you guys now have optionality for the rest of your lives that very few people in human history have ever had. So that's like, I think it's awesome. Sorry, Mindy. I'm just kidding. I'm just excited about that. I think more people should do what they're doing and try to earn that high. Like, clearly a lot of things over a decade have transpired to make as possible, where like good grades, getting a degree, a certain degree, you know, dedicated work in the field to earn average $100,000 salaries, and living and extreme defense on extreme defense on the defensive side. Well, that doesn't make any sense, but you know, like the low spending. So lots of good things transpired to get here, and it is an all out approach. It is extreme what you guys are doing, and it's awesome. Sorry, continue, Mindy.
I think that she has had the conversations with her fiance and made the decision, this is what we find important. You want to go to the gym. Somebody could see $2,400. Oh, that's a lot of money. Well, that's $200 a month. I don't think that's anything crazy for a gym membership, especially if you use it. Now, if you were like, oh, I really hate going to the gym, but I pay $2,400 a year for the gym. Well, you should cut that out because that's not doing anything for you. You have a travel fund. There are people who are pursuing financial independence. They're like, nope, can't spend any money on travel. It's you know, it seems like you are choosing what's important to you, spending where it counts, and not spending where it doesn't count. And that's kind of like everything we preach here. So I think Christine is the poster girl for financial independence.
Thank you, Mindy.
I think you're killing it. And I think you are... As you know, if you want to spend a little bit more on something, it'll be okay because you know that that's just one thing. I wouldn't recommend going out and getting an all new wardrobe, but a brand new car that you lease, a cell phone that's, you know, $300 a month with all the things and, you know, getting the big package on the TV. And it doesn't sound like that's what you want. So no. Continue doing what you're doing and you'll make it.
Yeah, we'll get there.
If you don't make it, there's a catastrophic thing that happens and nobody else will make it either. So that's not
I agree.
That's not really helpful or hopeful.
What are some, you know, besides complimenting your great work so far and telling you, it doesn't really matter on the 401k versus the Roth, take your guess about where tax rates are going to be 30 years from now. Where can we help you if there's anything else that you want to discuss here?
So I'm not allowed to get a new car. That's totally out of the picture.
You're almost a millionaire. Millionaires can buy new cars.
Okay. So I probably will, you know, those things are going to add up over time, but I guess, you know, I'll try to be smart about it. Currently I'm doing 50% towards the Roth 401k, 50% towards traditional in my 401k. So I think that's a good idea.
That's a good hedge there. Yeah. Mindy looks like she has some words of wisdom, but is muted.
I quit. That's the end. I like that split because you're reducing your taxable income while also growing tax-free in the Roth. And at your age and your income level, I think that's a good solution. I'm struggling with the, should I reduce my taxable income or should I contribute to a Roth 401k? And I'm not really sure what the answer is. I have a bunch of questions around that. So, but this isn't my show. This is your show, but I like what you're doing.
Thank you.
In your application, you mentioned that you were saving for, retirement, financial independence, and kids' college. Are you doing anything towards kids' college right now? I mean, there's no kids.
I'm going to wait till they're born, and then I think I'll start up some funds. And I don't know if I'll have like a joint kids' fund, like a 529 plan, or I'm not really sure how I'm going to approach that, or if it's just going to be like a brokerage account with their names on it to give more flexibility. What do you guys think?
Just because we're bigger pockets, one option that I really like that Brandon, I don't know if invented, but I think maybe has made more popular is the idea of like, this is a good case for real estate, I think, because you put down $60,000 on a rental property and you put on a 15-year note and you don't really cash flow from it, but you let the property just kind of pay down the note and self-capitalize. And by the end of 15 years, when your kid's 15, you have a paid off property. And then you cash out, refi it on a 30-year note. And that is what is used for the kid's college fund. And you know, after the 30 years, that note gets completely paid down. And now you funded the second generation as well with one rental property, which I think is a really powerful, intuitive concept. You can, you know, with that. So something to consider if you like real estate, but otherwise the 529 plan will work just as well.
No, I like that idea. That's a good idea.
Yeah, I'm going to link to that article in the show notes because that's a really fun article. Brandon wrote, "How I Used Real Estate to Pay for My Newborn Daughter's College Education." And he lists out some really great points. Scott did a nice little overview of that.
Christine, any last questions before we kind of wrap up here?
There's one thing we're a little nervous about is locking in an interest rate. We've noticed that they kept climbing. They're like at 2.875, I think, in January. And we don't get to lock ours in until probably August or July. And they're climbing pretty rapidly.
That is... Oh, I hear what you're saying. So the Fed is meeting actually today when we're recording. It's going to meet later today. They are expected to say that they are not going to raise rates till like 2023. But I, you know, clearly it hasn't happened yet, so I can't predict what they're going to say. Rates have been climbing and rates were in the absolute toilet for a long time. And I guess that's not really in the basement. You can't say toilet because toilet implies bad. And they were awesomely low. Historically, 3% is still an awesome rate. I'm at 3.5. I couldn't take advantage of the refinancing window last year because I just refinanced and they want you to wait 6 months before you refinance again. And by the time I was ready to refinance, it didn't make sense again. So I lost out on that ridiculously low rate, but I still have a 3.5% interest rate, which is the second lowest rate I've ever had on any property ever. So it is tough to watch these rates go up. Fannie and Freddie just came out with more guidance that they're not going to buy as many second homes and investment property in loans. So you'll see rates going up even more for those as well. But I think you can rent, I'm sorry, I think you can lock in 60 or 90 days out. I would connect with a lender and just continue to ask them, hey, September is about to happen. Or, you know, we can close in September. When can I lock in my rate? I'm wondering if you could close sooner on the property to lock in the rate. And I don't do a lot of new build purchases, so I don't know what that entails. I always thought you had to wait till it was actually done before you could close. So I would reach out to the lender. Are you working with the lenders? I'm sorry. I would reach out to the builder. Are you working with the builder's lender?
Not necessarily. If they have the best options, I think we're going to shop rates a little bit.
Okay. Yeah.
The best one.
I have found that the builder's lender in many cases will offer so many incentives that it makes sense to go with them. They have a credit for closing costs or a credit for, you know, other things that other lenders can't compete with. But that's not always the case. I have had other lenders who will be able to beat the rates or beat the closing costs or both than the builder's lender. So I would definitely shop that around. I have a great lender. I'm going to send you his contact information when we're done here. He's really good at just explaining the options better than I am.
Are you being offered the option to lock in rates right now?
No. They said 60 days. At least the builder lender did say 60 days.
Yeah, I think this is a good one to crowdsource. Let's post this in the Facebook group and see if anybody, we have a couple of lenders in there, and see if anybody knows about options to do this. My belief is that it'll be a non-standard thing to lock in a rate this far in advance of your closing. It's possible they exist, but my guess, not knowing anything, we'll see what the discussion brings, is that that will be some form of option that you'll have to pay for. And my belief is that typically buying options to lock in rates or, you know, calls or puts in any type of industry is typically a loser for you. You are in a position where you can afford to buy what is effectively insurance, but insurance is typically a good bet for the insurance provider, the option seller, not the option buyer, the insurance buyer. So I think mathematically or statistically, if I'm right at all on that hunch, it'll be a little bit of a loser to try to lock that in this far in advance because you're paying for that uncertainty, the prediction get that uncertainty. But you are certainly in a position where it will not be like a major consequence if that option even exists. So let's find out from the Facebook group and see if I'm right on that, and if that option even exists in the first place.
Yep. So hop on over to the Facebook group. I will have posted a question that I'm holding on at the top and see what we can crowdsource for you, Christine.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, Christine, I really appreciate your time today. This was a lot of fun. This was super helpful. I think that it can be kind of like, okay, what do I do next? And just continue on. Maybe, you know, if there's an opportunity to do something that you really want to do, it's okay to do it because you've set yourself up for so long with such a strong position.
Yep.
All right. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on and sharing this. This is great.
Yeah. Okay. And we will talk to you soon. Okay. That was Christine. Scott, what did you think?
I think it was great. It was a shorter episode. We didn't have that much advice for Christine, right? I mean, the decisions are, hey, what do you think about this bond, this money in bonds? What do you think about this money in the 401k versus the Roth? I mean, these are complete guesses over 30-year periods about what is going to happen with interest rates. Are they going to continue dropping and the bond portfolio is going to go up faster than stocks like they did for a period of 2020 when interest rates fell? You know, I don't know. I think generally, Mindy and I's bet is on equities over the long run over bond returns. And I think, generally speaking, I kind of have a slight lean towards the Roth, but who knows how that's going to turn out over 30 years, whether you're going to be happy or you put money into 401k versus the Roth. So it's like, I think she's just going to crush it on the journey to FI and really just needs to peg how much spending she thinks she's going to need to do in 5-10 years. And that number is super high right now, which I think is a good conservative estimate. But, you know, I think that that could come at the expense of nearly a decade of not really reaping the benefits of the incredible position that they've already built. So I think it'll be interesting to see what she decides.
I think so too. And, you know, I love that she's estimating high because, like I said, you can always spend less, invest more, and then, you know, keeping an eye on what you think you'll need and keeping an eye on where you're at is a really great way to just be conscious of what's going on with your money. Of course, she can continue to work for another decade. She probably won't have to. And I'm excited for what the future brings for Christine because I know she's going to kill it.
Absolutely.
Should we get out of here, Scott?
Let's do it.
Scott and I are really having a good time with this Finance Friday. And if you would like your finances reviewed, please apply at biggerpockets.com/financereview. We would love to look into your finances and see if there's any suggestions we can make for you. From episode 184 of the Bigger Pockets Money Podcast, he is Scott Trench and I am Mindy Jensen saying, be sweet, parakeet. The market is changing, and finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom, and the best investors know it's not about timing the market, it's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into real estate investing or take it to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With the Bigger Pockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals, enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and boom, instantly matched with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all host and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.